Hey everybody, this is Ali Ciardo and this is a Photo Field Notes podcast. And today I'm talking with Andy Hayes from Palette. Palette is an editing gear. It's like knobs and dials and buttons and all these things that you plug into your computer to edit your photos. I've talked about it before in the podcast. I'm obsessed. I'm not paid in any way by Palette. I just really love it. And so we're going to talk about editing workflow and how to tackle your workflow and edit faster. And it gets a little bit technical, but I think it's a really useful conversation. And with that, I have two quick notes for you. First off, if you go to photofieldnotes.com/palette, you can actually get a coupon code for free shipping if you do want to order Palette gear. And again, I'm not paid for this. I'm just trying to help you out. So I asked Andy if he had any coupon codes he could share, and this is the one he shared with all of you. And second of all, if you are looking for more information on editing, you can go to photofieldnotes.com and you can check out my shop. And I do have an editing video there that walks through my exact editing workflow, how I speed up my workflow, how exactly I do it. So you can check that out at photofieldnotes.com and then click on the shop. All right, let's get into our episode today.
Welcome to the Photo Field Notes podcast, where you'll find stories, tips, and inspiration from professional photographers to get you taking action in your own business and making your business dreams a reality.
Hey everybody, this is Ali Ciardo, and today I'm talking with Andy Hayes, who is the community manager for Palette. And Palette, we'll kind of get into the details of what exactly Palette is in just a minute. But I'll start by saying I discovered it actually through my husband. I have no idea how he found it. And we're super pragmatic. So for my birthday, instead of surprising me, he's always making sure I'm happy with the gift. So he came to me before my birthday and he's like, "Hey, I discovered this thing. It looks really cool. I think maybe it would be useful to you. But before I go and buy it for you, do you actually want it?" And I looked at it and I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's so awesome." And so he got it for me for my birthday. So January this year was when I first got my first little starter kit with Palette. And I remember opening the box and it was just like so beautiful and so exciting. And I've really put it to work for me in my editing. And again, I'll explain everything and what it is so that you guys will understand everything about it. But it's just been a game changer for me. And so Andy and I have connected and we've been talking about, you know, the ways I use it, the things that they're doing. And it's just gotten me, I feel like I'm becoming a Palette cheerleader. Like I bring it to meetups and I'm like, "You guys, check this out. It's so awesome." And people get really excited about it. So, all right. So Andy, let's start with you. First, I would just love to hear your story about, you know, you getting your involvement with Palette, how Palette got started. Like what was the intent of the company in the first place? Just give me a little bit of a background of yourself and the company.
For sure. Well, speaking to myself and my experience, I'm relatively new to the game with Palette. I've been with them for about 8 months now. And I was brought on because I do have a decent amount of expertise in photography as sort of a pro photographer. And I can speak to workflow and I can speak to the pain points that a working photographer might encounter. So I studied photography in school. I've worked in camera shops. I've worked as a pro photographer before doing commercial gigs and such. And so I was brought on because of that. And kind of my efforts with Palette so far have centered around building a community around the controller. And, you know, what you've said about getting so hyped about what Palette can do for you and your workflow, that's the kind of thing I love to hear. And one of my main efforts has been to find these people who it's changed their work, you know, so strongly for the better, and kind of find out ways to engage with them and find out ways that we can create that experience for everyone that encounters Palette. So Palette itself started about 4 years ago when our CEO and our company founder, Kelvin Chu, he was a mechatronics engineering grad from University of Waterloo. And as an initial project, he decided he'd look at how people interact with technology, especially how creative people interact with technology. And he wanted to find out what the pain points were and ways that he could improve it. And he immediately zeroed in on photography, because if you look at music, for example, or broadcast, a lot of professionals in those industries have these big mixing boards that they work with. And the tactile controls, they allow them to edit better and they allow them to edit faster, and the whole process just goes more smoothly. But photographers, you know, we're very creative people, we're hands-on people, but we're stuck with this mouse and keyboard paradigm that it works well, once you get used to it, but there's this huge learning curve, and it's inefficient, right? So he said this is an industry that's ready to be not disrupted, but augmented. And so the pallet controller, as we know it now, was kind of finalized in about 2015 with a successful Kickstarter. We started working with the Adobe team to first create an integration with Lightroom, where instead of using like keyboard shortcuts or, you know, working around current paradigms, we went directly to the program. So when you turn a dial or move a slider in Pallet, it's talking directly to Lightroom. It's way more efficient. So that's kind of the genesis of Pallet there. And then in the meantime, what we've done is we've expanded a bit into the video market. You know, many photographers are now kind of transitioning to be part-time videographers as well. There's this convergence between the two industries. So we've worked on things like Premiere Pro and After Effects. We've worked on Photoshop, because once again, Photoshop, there are these inefficiencies with the keyboard and the mouse. And our next steps are to look at other creative industries that are ripe for the sort of augmentation that we can bring.
Nice. Well, I have my palette, my gear sitting right in front of me, and I'm telling you now, if I'm out somewhere, or let's say, like, we've been renovating our basement where my office is, and so I come upstairs into the kitchen to work, and sometimes if I left it downstairs, even if I have, like, a single photo to edit, I'm like, oh, I'm lost without it. So I know I'm, like, you guys are probably like, oh my gosh, Allie, but it's been really fun. So with your own background as a photographer, the thing that I really wanted to talk to you about today, and obviously Pallet is a part of this, is just creating better workflows for our photography editing. I think so many people get so caught up in the workflow system. And so I have a lot of portrait photographers and wedding photographers who are coming home from a session and they just have, let's say, maybe hundreds of pictures, maybe thousands of pictures, and they need to cull them. They need to edit them. They need to export them. They need to, you know, sometimes choose photos to be black and white, choose photos that need extra edits, all of these things that go into editing. And I've heard people spending, you know, anywhere from a couple hours to like 40 hours on a wedding. And that, frankly, is just not sustainable. I don't think that you can run a profitable business if you're spending 40 hours editing every single wedding. So do you have any tips beyond, and obviously, you know, we can get into the details of Pallet for that, but as a photographer yourself, what are some of the things that you've found that have helped you to just streamline that workflow process? Like, what does it look like for you from beginning to end in your workflow?
Right. Well, I think the first big revelation for me, and I'm sure you and many people listening to this will have gone through kind of the same pain point, is that the big revelation for me was when I learned how to cull properly, because before then, I would find that I'd load my images in and I'd have hundreds, if not thousands, of images ready to be edited. And I would jump into, you know, I'd make a couple initial picks, and then I'd jump into editing them, and you fall into this trap where you want to make the first one or two absolutely perfect before you touch any of the others. Next thing you know, it's midnight, you've downed three cups of coffee, and you have about five photos done, and it just feels like it's a drag, right? So the first revelation for me was learning how to cull and tag my images properly. Now, I know you've mentioned that you use Photo Mechanic for this, and I've had the experience of using Photo Mechanic previously. I'm pretty Lightroom-centric, though, so I use, in my case, I first do a round of pick and reject with my photos, and then I delete all rejected photos from my hard drive, which, because I'm using a laptop that has finite storage as well, and you know, I have finite budget for buying hard drives upon hard drives for backup, it helps so that I don't, you know, accumulate thousands of junk files.
Sure.
And then once I've gone through, usually based on the destination or based on my intent, I'll give them ratings and color flags. Now, personally, I don't shoot a ton of weddings or portrait sessions, but we'll give that as an example. If I was, for example, choosing a round of photos that would make it to an album, it might be 5-star and it might be tagged red, versus photos that will make it into smaller prints or digital files, but might not be worthy of an inclusion in, you know, 100 or 200 photos to be printed large or put in an album. They might be rated 3 stars and tagged blue, for example. When I do landscape photography, I'll use the color tags to keep track of my brackets. My overexposed versus my underexposed versus my regular exposed images. so that when I go back later and put them together in Photoshop, I can keep track of my sets of 3 or 5 bracketed images. So that was kind of the first revelation for me. The second revelation was using the tone curve in Lightroom during developing. What we find is that not many times does the camera nail the contrast curve exactly as you want it when you're shooting. If you're shooting under flatter light, like an overcast sky, or indoors when there's, you know, strong ceiling light, for example, you typically are adding a bit of contrast to the screen, to the image, so that things aren't looking terribly flat. Versus, you know, the opposite is also true. If you're working with supplemental light, if you're working, you know, under a brighter sky, for example, sometimes things can get too contrasty and you have to flatten it out. So what I typically find is that when I go through a shoot, I'll group the photos together, sort of after my initial culling process, and I'll group them together in groups of photos that have the same lighting and same color properties. I'll do a quick develop that evens out the histogram, make sure that the white balance is dead on, and then I'll sync that set of images. And that's when I may also create 1 or 2 custom presets that I'll use just for that session.
So you'll save that preset and then you can apply it across whatever you need for that batch or for that set.
You've got it. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the places where I use the palette that not every photographer has. I know you use it in the same way that toggling through 1 or 2 user presets using a button is very helpful for me. From there, I typically go into Photoshop as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Obviously, look, everyone's going to have a different approach to their workflow. Everyone's going to find their rhythm and find the way that works best for them. Maybe one person likes to star their pics as ones or red, and one person likes to star them as fives or T in Photomechanic or Lightroom, whatever it might be. I think that the key, though, is creating a system for yourself in the first place that you can stick to and actually putting it into action rather than just kind of jumping in and try to take it on. So for me, you know, I found that if I tag my images, both tag them and then also 5-star the ones that I want to either share with vendors or put in the album or put on the blog, whatever it might be, just to kind of separate them out. If I do that in the very beginning, it just makes things easier for me. So whether, you know, you're going to take the system that I use, whether you're going to take the system that Andy uses, or you're going to invent your own system, I think that the key is just to experiment, find out what works for you, and make sure you have a system, because I think too many people just kind of jump in and don't even really know where to start. So it's good to look at what other people are doing so that you can create your own system within that. All right. So talk to me a little bit about now, so that people understand within Palette, I'll explain what I have on mine anyway. And if you want to go to photofieldnotes.com, you can check out some images and see what it actually looks like and see my setup. So I have personally, I love the dials. So you can actually like turn these dials, turn these knobs. I have a slider that you can move. I use that one for cropping. And then there's these buttons that are kind of like, I guess you'd call them arcade style buttons that I use for quickly selecting different things. And I can just like I live by it. For me, I love straight lines, really nice straight crops. And so I use the lens correction tool all the time when there's a building or walls or anything going on. So I click that button and it, boom, it does it for me automatically. And that to me is everything. Like if I literally had one button, it would be that button. So why don't you tell me, and again, knowing that everyone's setup is going to be different based on your own preferences, what you shoot, your style, etc. I'd love to hear a little bit about your setup. So what's your, like your perfect ideal setup? What do you have on your palette gear?
So in terms of palette hardware, what I've chosen to start with is our expert kit, which is 3 dials, 2 buttons, and 2 sliders. And then you can add on module by module. So what I've done for myself is I've gone ahead and added a 4th dial and a 3rd button. And I find that setup suits me really well. I like having the 4 dials because they suit, in Lightroom, you have this paradigm where each panel is broken up usually into 2 or 4 or 8 sliders. Whether it's 8 for the HSL sliders, 4 for highlight shadows, whites and blacks, or 2 for exposure and contrast. So I feel it fits there very well. I actually use a button to switch between profiles, and that is sets of controls. So in one profile, for example, my slider might control crop angle, where in the next it might control vignetting. So when you have a finite number of controls, this allows you to extend the usefulness of your set quite a bit more than if it was just one set profile. So how I like to use it is my culling profile is very, very basic, and I've actually intentionally made it smaller than the capabilities of my kit, because when I go on the road sometimes, or if I'm going into a coffee shop, for example, I don't want to bring along a big kit. I want to cut it down just to two buttons and one dial. And basically, I'll use the dial to change the rating on my photos, and then I'll use the buttons for pick and reject. And I have auto advance turned on in Lightroom, so it's as simple as I dial in a rating, and I hit pick, it goes to the next photo. Next photo I reject, goes to the next photo, and so on and so forth. But then when I jump into basic development, you know, I have my four dials for things usually like white balance temperature, exposure, highlights, and shadows. I have a slider for crop angle. The sliders are absolutely brilliant for crop angle. And I have another slider for clarity. And then my buttons are allowing me to cycle through my user presets, as we kind of mentioned before in passing. And then the second one pastes my developed settings from the previous photo. So as I'm going through, basically once I've synced my photos and sets, I can then go through and fine-tune a photo. And if I like what I did there, I can go to the very next photo and just press on the paste from previous. Or if I'm opening up a new set of photos that I haven't developed yet, you know, I can start by cycling through my user presets, finding one that works really well on that particular set of photos, and then once again go through, slowly tweak and sync them. So what I found is very helpful is to create two developed profiles. Because what I find is that the more that you divide up your palette profiles according to stages of your workflow, the easier it is to kind of incorporate the controls. So definitely have separate culling and develop profiles, but I even have separate develop and fine-tune. So in the fine-tune, I'll have things like vignetting, grain, sharpening, noise reduction. If I'm shooting interiors or architecture or landscapes, I'll do the transform controls as well, so I can keep all my verticals and my horizons perfectly straight. So the idea is, you know, I have about 10 controls at my fingertips at any given time, but over four profiles, now I have about 40 controls that are right there.
Okay, explain to me. It's so fascinating because I think that the way that I approach editing is very different. Like I said, everybody has their own approach. And I think that anytime you talk to a different photographer about how they do it, it's sort of mind-blowing to even, like, some of the features that you're using that I literally have never touched just because my approach is different. So are you're creating your own presets each time you're editing. Do you use any other like presets that you've already created or other presets that you just naturally have on your within Lightroom?
To be honest, I don't really use any of the default Lightroom presets, with the exception of the black and white presets, the ones for blue filter, green, red filter, etc. Because I find they're really useful for quickly kind of dialing in contrast on a black and white photo. For the most part, I make my own. And my strategy behind it is every time I do a shoot, I actually create a new catalog. And those presets live as part of that catalog. And then I'll have some presets that I've gotten, you know, from VSCO and similar from fellow photographers that I'll throw in with my user presets as well. But for the most part, I'm creating custom presets per shoot. And I use it instead of the sync tool or instead of paste from previous tool. It allows me to unify my photos on a more macro level, and then the paste from previous tool I only use on a very micro level, where it's making two photos closer in appearance, for example.
And then explain, as you're going through, so you're looking at different things and you're toggling between these different things that you can apply. So are you actually going through a set of photos more than once, or are you just doing this all together as you go? Like, are you doing a batch and then you're going back and doing the other thing across all of them after that?
Right. Typically what I'll do is I'll work with the photos in sets, and the sets will be kind of defined by, if I have multiple subjects over the course of the shoot, they'll be defined by the subject, or if the lighting changes, they'll be defined by the lighting. Because the whole idea is that generally, under the same lighting, the same development settings are going to work reasonably well. You just fine-tune from there. You know, for the same subject, under the same lights, you're going to want the same kind of aesthetic. I look at it very similar to almost like an editor cutting together a movie. Some scenes will be a little darker, some will be a little lighter. Some, you know, you'll want a more like blue kind of color palette. Some you'll want a more warmer color palette. And you just want to make sure that everything flows together well. You know, if two characters are having a conversation, you don't want the appearance to be changing then. But if it changes sets completely, then it makes sense for the aesthetic to change. Well, I look at my sets of photos the same way. I want it to make sense when the aesthetic is unified, and then I want to find a natural break-off point where I can move to a different kind of look. So to answer your question, I will edit them sequentially within a set, make sure I like how that set looks, and then I'll move on to a final one.
That's similar then to how I do it. That makes sense. So do you have any other, you know, tricks or things that you've found that have really been useful for you that you've developed in your own workflow over time that save you time?
I would say that the biggest time saver for me is, and I keep circling back to the presets and syncing photos, but I do truly believe that, you know, when I first started, I was wasting a lot of time by starting each photo from square one. And I still believe that even pro photographers can fall into this trap where it looks decent enough out of camera that you just kind of start from square one with each and move a few things and then move on to the next photo. And you fall into this trap where you're wasting so much time editing just a small set. For me, it's better to find, you know, where my kind of logical set of photos is and work on all of those simultaneously, if that makes sense. The second thing that I'd recommend for saving time is, you know, while the local adjustments in Lightroom are fantastic, I found that I saved so much time with heavy retouching or heavily changing the appearance in photo when I just bit the bullet and took it into Photoshop. And I edit non-destructively, so I use layers. I make sure that if I don't like something, I can always go back and undo it. But I find for things like adding local filters, for spot removal, for drastically changing an image or montaging multiple images, there's no substitute for a smart Photoshop workflow. And a great companion to the palette I find for Photoshop is the Wacom tablet as well.
Yes, yeah. And I probably could do this better. I do a little bit with Photoshop for, you know, little fine things at the very end, but I actually export to JPEG and then I go through and I flag the ones that I want to do a little bit extra to and I do it at the end. So I'm sure I could do that better, that's how I do it. Okay, one more thing that I'm going to add in just because I just thought of it and it's really relevant and it's helped me save a ton of time is going back to the shooting itself. So I think that so many photographers, especially portrait photographers, wedding photographers, but really everybody, especially early on, gets a little bit nervous about missing a moment, or they just kind of feel a little bit trigger happy, for lack of a better word, where they're, instead of taking the time to slow down and compose the photo and frame the photo how they want it to be framed, they're kind of just taking a whole bunch more. So I actually, like a wedding, I feel like I average around like maybe 1,200 photos that I'll take at a wedding. And the majority of those, I might deliver between 500 and 800 photos from that. And that to me saves a ton of time versus if I was taking 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 photos, because even though I only have, let's say, three photos of a particular moment or family grouping to make sure the eyes are open, each photo I've taken the time to make sure that I framed it how I want it. I have exactly what I want in that frame. I've tried when I can to use like an expo disc to get my white balance correct in camera, shoot on manual so that I have the exposure looks pretty good. It might need a little bit of tweaking. And when I've done that, it just saves me, I mean, of all things, that saves me a ton of time. And I can't tell you what a nice thing that's been, even just obviously the culling, but also saving time in cropping to not have all these photos that are all over the place when I just take a moment to look and really look and frame it how I want it to be framed.
I think that's a fantastic point. When I was in school, I had this incredibly talented professor, and he was constantly reminding us to plan our work and work our plan, was his saying. And what he meant by that was he showed us how when he leaves for a shoot, he already has it planned out how he believes the day is going to look. And he plans it so tightly that he knows when he walks into a room how he's going to get the shot. he frames up the foreground, the midground, and the background so that the photo has a beautiful layered composition to it. He gets the shot, and then he has enough time left over that he can then experiment and keep himself open to sort of finding magic that that wasn't expected. But he knows, bare minimum, he's going to come away with the shot. And I've tried to follow that advice in my professional work, and it's never let me down.
Yeah, obviously that can adapt depending on the type of photography that you're doing. But I did find that mainly as a wedding photographer, there are obviously some key shots and things that I know that I want to get. And as I started to do more with delivering albums and knowing ultimately my ultimate goal for my photos is to design them into an album, which is really challenging when you haven't planned for that. When you're just taking these photos that you've taken and you're like, okay, now I need to put them together. But yeah, as you can start to work backward and have a plan and know how it all flows together and what you want that to look like as a final piece, it's definitely helpful to start from the beginning and know the end game. Obviously, like you said, there's creativity in there, there's room to play, but you need to have an idea of what you want to get out of it at the end of the day.
Exactly. And the more strategy that you have while shooting, the more it carries over into your editing. Your editing becomes more structured and the whole thing just falls together better afterwards.
Yeah. And last thing I'll say to the shooting point is that I think I used to be afraid to take the time. I used to think that my clients would get upset if I took too much time, if I said, oh, hang on just 1 minute while I get this expo disc out and set my white balance. Oh, hang on while I need to really back up. Instead of, like, for example, instead of using a zoom lens and just making it a wider angle shot, I step backward with my feet and I say, hey, I'm just going to take a couple steps back. So hang on just 1 minute while I do that. And so I think that when you're working with people, especially, you need to get comfortable saying to them, hey, this is just going to take me 1 minute, but it's going to be so worth it because it's going to be the photo will be so much better for it. So that's been really big for me, is not feeling that pressure to be shooting every second and explaining to my clients that by taking the time to do this, you're actually going to get a better image at the end of the day.
No, that's a fantastic point. If I can jump in just with a quick technical learning that I found too that helps.
Yeah.
Is I found that once I started using back button focus, my keeper rate went up significantly, and I was no longer worried about missing the moment because it decouples the act of focusing from the act of taking a shot. You can be sitting there basically watching through your viewfinder, waiting for the right moment, but maintaining focus. And then when the right moment does strike, you don't have that hesitation when you press down on the shutter and your camera refocuses for a second. So just if anyone out there hasn't tried back button focus, I do highly recommend it, you know, experiment with it, see if it works for you. But it's as you were saying that, I thought I kind of had the same light bulb moment, and for me it started when I started using back button focus.
Right. Yeah. And I will totally admit I don't use back button focus, but I use continuous focus, and the way that I do it is really similar, so it works for me. But yeah, I think that you need to have that system, and I should say you should use back button focus. I'm like the bad person who doesn't, but I do use continuous. It works well. So sorry out there. Don't tell me I'm wrong if I'm totally shooting wrong, but it's working for me. It's working for me. I'm probably the only person who still doesn't use back button focus. I've tried it and I it just wasn't comfortable for me for some reason. So do it. Yeah. Listen to Andy, not me.
Everyone has their own preference. That's
yeah,
the beauty of it.
Exactly. So Andy, tell me where listeners can find you and where they can find Palette.
You can visit us online at palettegear.com, or all our social accounts are under Palette Gear. That's Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We have a community blog as well hosted on Medium at Palette. And Allie was actually generous enough to write a post for us about how she uses Palette along with Photo Mechanic and with Lightroom to develop her wedding photography. So in terms of for brick and mortar locations, this list is growing all the time. And even by the time you hear this, it'll probably be out of date. But we're at B&H and Adorama, as well as we've just added on a few camera partners on the West Coast, Glazier's Camera, Sammy's, and let's see, Ohio has the Pixel Connection as well. And those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head. If you're outside the U.S., and you want to find us in the store, just go to palettegear.com and go to where to buy. So we've got about 30 retailers worldwide.
Awesome. Well, I'll also put that in the show notes at photofieldnotes.com so you can go check it out there. And I'll also put a link to my post with Palette about how I use it and the exact setup that I use so that you can check that out. And like I said, everyone will be different. So you will probably find your own setup in your own workflow that works for you. But the key is really taking the time to, instead of just continuing to do the same thing, thinking, oh, I don't have time to create a workflow that works. I don't have time to take a step back and consider this. Take the time, because it's going to save you so much time in the end when you actually put a system together.
Every minute will pay itself back 5-10-fold, no problem, just within a couple of weeks of it. And you bring up a good point. Everyone's workflow is different, and we do have a community page where all Palette users can upload their profiles and share them with others. So if you want to visit there and audition a few Palette profiles and see if someone doesn't have a great idea, that might not work for you, right?
Nice. Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'll put that on there too. Awesome. Andy, thank you so much for sharing. I know this gets a little bit technical, but I really love that, because I think that those are the things that people can really start putting into action today, and they're going to just make their lives so much easier.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be able to speak with you, and I hope this helps a few of you with your workflow.
Thanks for listening. Check out show notes at photofieldnotes.com. And if you loved this episode, leave your review on iTunes. See you next week.